You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 5 June, we've got U.S. balance of trade data later today, expected minus $94 billion, but that is improving from minus $140 billion. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. SPAR results. I mean, have they turned the corner? Should ShopRite be worried? I don't know. They had write downs and slipping revenue. Leila Ibrahim from PwC. Talking about new pay disclosure rules that are coming to companies to disclose that pay gap between top and bottom. And does the Remco get involved? Stephen Amy, he is from Ashburton Investments. 3 money lessons he wish he knew at 20. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, 72 million rand foot and mouth vaccine delivery due mid-June. Karen B says vaccination efforts are contingent on availability from the state. Business Day, 91 surges the most in 5 years on bullish outlook. SA's largest asset manager says its proposed transaction with Sanlam remains on track. Morning markets. The US was green, but S&P up like a point at 0.01% higher. NASDAQ a quarter of a percent higher. The 10-year is looking better at 4.376%. Over in the east, it's mixed. We got Sydney down a fifth of a percent. Tokyo down a quarter of a percent. Hong Kong down 0.6%. And Tencent, the green, 0.2% higher. Commodities are also mixed. Gold futures, 3,398. Brent weaker, 64.74. Platinum 1,092, palladium weaker at 1,006. The rand is 1783. Bitcoin is 105,000 exactly. And top 40 opening call, red open, 314 points down or 0.36% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning. SPAR results, they talk around a lot of milestones being achieved, exited Poland, restructuring debt, a bunch maybe sort of turnaround stuff sort of happening. My sense was these weren't exactly knock it out the park numbers. Your take on the results and on the turnaround story they are punting?
Yeah, sort of being the operative word here. So if you look at the kind of three kind of grocery retailers in South Africa, and I concede SPAR is a wholesaler, right? Mm-hmm. You have ShopRite absolutely flying. You have Pick and Pay coming back from the deepest of doldrums.
Yeah.
And then you have SPAR, which was kind of floating in the middle, and then they decided to allocate capital to far-flung places like Switzerland and Poland. And now they were left with a bit of a mess. And that all coincided with them deciding to roll out SAP to their biggest distribution center. And it all just kind of started falling apart from there. So it's not as deep a turnaround requirement as is the Pick and Pay situation. But it's going to take work. And I think that they're still at the beginning stages of that work. They've sold Poland, but they still have Switzerland, even though they're in negotiations to sell it. They still have the Southwest England business that's also loss-making. Brand new information to me, by the way. Mm-hmm. So they have to get rid of that stuff. And then they have to really focus on growth and their market positioning, because I think that they're struggling with that a little bit.
And it's not one of the lessons for SPAR, but I think even more so for investors. The big offshore deals, I don't know, when they happen, run. I mean, I'm not even going to bother listing them because we don't have enough time. The sun will be up before I'm finished. But these big deals always seem to turn sour.
Yeah, you should probably just buy it later when you've seen whether or not the deal is working or not. I think it's actually a really good rule of thumb. Big deal, like, just remove your capital from that situation. I think it's very difficult to know whether or not these things are going to work out. Usually transformative deals tend to not be that transformative. It's very difficult to implement. Of course, you get incredible operators that have made big deals overseas, yep, that have done exceptionally well. But yeah, I mean, I would rather not be involved in testing that out. I think it's a lesson that I need to learn as well, because very often I'll look at the deal metrics and I'll look at the enthusiasm of management and the presentation looks fantastic. And I'm like, this is an incredible idea. We are diversifying into hard currency. We are getting exposure to Europe, different markets. And it ends up like this. So yeah, I'd rather just wait and see. Maybe it's a good idea to exit once any company makes such an announcement.
Yeah, the two biggies that hurt me was Woolies and Famous Brands. And I totally take your point. They looked great. Those PowerPoints were spectacular. But I'm slowly learning my lesson. A quick thought on 91. Massive outflows, almost £5 billion pounds of outflows. But the market really liked the forward looking bits, because that stock rallied yesterday.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing was, I mean, this was a full year result, and all of those outflows came in the first half. They actually had marginal inflows in the second half. So that is very encouraging. And I think broadly speaking, I mean, we had Coronation, I think, with an update or results a few weeks ago as well, also seeing much lower outflows as a percentage of their opening assets under management. So I think that I don't want to get too excited, but it seems as if the massive divestment and kind of savings drawdown from South African investors in particular could be slowing. And I think that is hugely positive.
Yeah, and I just said 91 is almost 50% up from the Liberation Day lows. It's been quite an astounding move. Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments, appreciate the early morning. Our poll today is back to SPAR. Is there value in this food business? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Leila Ibrahim. She's PwC People and Organization Reward Partner. Leila, appreciate the time. New rules coming in around company pay disclosure. We've had the rules around C-suite disclosures for, I think, a couple of decades now. But now this is going to be focusing on the entire staffing, the highest staffs, lowest and averages, et cetera. That's a fair reflection of what is coming down the road.
That's right. Morning, Simon. Yes, we are expecting very soon the Companies Amendment Act to be implemented. And certainly they're going to be bringing in the new required disclosures, what we commonly refer to as the pay ratios. So top versus bottom, top 5% to bottom 5%, lowest paid employee within the organization will now need to be disclosed. Mm-hmm. And as you quite rightly said, we've had the executive directors and prescribed officers being disclosed, certainly for listed companies, for quite a while now. But this is going to usher in a new era, you know, with more disclosures and focus on income inequality, I think.
And it is that, I think, to a large degree, those horror numbers. And truthfully, they are horror and I think should be disclosed around that difference between the lowest and typically the CEO. Does this include contract workers? Because there could be a loophole there, or am I sort of over-imagining things?
So you're touching on a very technical point and one that's sort of taken up a lot of mental space for us, you know, consulting on this in the last couple of weeks. So at the moment, the amendments refer to the definition of employee, and the definition of employee leans on the Labor Relations Act definition. And those of you who are familiar with that definition will know that that is a very wide-ranging definition. It's meant to protect as many employees as possible. So at the moment, contractor is one of those, you know, if they're truly an independent contractor and they're not seen to be an employee, then they would be excluded. But there are many other employees that are sort of drawn into that, like your temporary workers, your seasonal workers, your interns, etc., which is going to have quite a far-reaching impact on the pay ratios. And in my view, is going to make it quite difficult to compare these ratios from company to company, because as you allude to, it's going to be quite different in terms of structures and who employs how and through what mechanisms.
Absolutely. And I hadn't even thought of, for example, an intern, which is typically an overly low paid wage. Do we have an expected date? As I understand, it's been signed but not yet implemented. Do we know when the date is?
You're right. So it's been signed but not implemented. No, some of the amendments were implemented in December. We are still waiting for the remainder of them to come through. I don't want to speculate. I'm expecting by the end of the year, but, you know, my expectations have been not met a few times before, so.
Okay, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll keep an eye on it. Does this then change the conversations at the Remuneration Committee, which is, I've always understood, was really, again, talking around salaries, bonuses and the like, around the C-suite, the board, the top executives. Those conversations are now surely going to be wider in terms of what is our range, what is our average, what is the top 5 and bottom 5%?
Yes, it's really interesting, and you're right. So typically your remuneration committees are tasked with looking at your top level, so your executives, and then overarching policy in terms of the rest of the organization. So, you know, we've been sort of pushing for a while that remuneration committees need to have more of a handle on what is going on throughout the organization. So the best REMCOs out there are getting reports on, you know, are there any differentiating factors in REM? Are we assessing whether there could be discrimination, et cetera? We obviously had all the equal pay for work of equal value legislation coming through a few years ago, and there was a shift when that came about. But definitely more and more, I mean, I'm seeing those conversations at board level and REMCO level about, you know, are we paying a living wage? What is the experience of our people? And, you know, PwC just did our global hopes and fears, you know, workforce survey. And I actually want to share with you one or two of the stats, because what we found is, and this is the Africa cut, okay? So my household struggles to pay all or some bills every month, 20% of participants were on that level. Then in terms of my household is able to pay all bills every month, but has very little or nothing left over for savings, holidays or extras, was 46%. Now, it should be noted it's quite similar to the rest of the world, but when you get to my household is able to pay bills, to pay all bills every month and has enough left over, we're only at 27%, where the rest of the world is at 38%. So it's a significant and stark difference. And you can see the need for the income inequality focus. But I do want to make the point that the pay ratios as they are a very shallow interpretation of what's going on. And I think we need to ensure that the focus of the conversation is around how do we better the lives of those who are our lowest paid workers and our most vulnerable, and not how do we, you know, overly focus on the executive pay, because the executive pay, a large portion of it is paid for performance. And we need to remember that when the executives are performing and their long-term incentives are paying out, that shows in the share price. And that's where a lot of people are investing their money and their pension and all of that. So it's the kind of bit of what is good for the goose is good for the gander if it's well designed at the top. So we need to make sure that these disclosures have the right narrative so that we're understanding that as well and we're not having the wrong conversation.
I love that point, because that, particularly at the lowest paid part, it is, you talk around living wage, you talk around minimum wage. You and I had a conversation recently and you had the phrase frugal dignity. We want to be able to live frugally, but live with dignity. And that suddenly takes I think of some of the minimum wages in South Africa and says, this just doesn't crack it, frankly. It's a different way of framing it.
Absolutely. And that's the key takeaway here. We need to have a look at what are we paying the lowest paid workers. The minimum wage is one thing. I mean, in the conversation I mentioned, you know, the minimum wage was like 3,000 rand or whatever it is a month. When we're looking at a living wage, so what do you need to have a frugal but dignified life? You know, referencing those stats that I've just talked about, what do you need to pay all your bills every month and just live a dignified life of being able to pay what you need to pay? And that's anywhere from 7,000 to 14,000, you know, depending on what we look at. And we need to understand the nuances in Africa. We have many more people dependent on one salary than we do overseas when we look at those living wages. So I really think all remuneration committees need to understand what a living wage is. And it does differ according to where you live, et cetera. And that's something that needs to be unpacked and understood. And that really is the focal area for the year and going forward.
Yeah, and hopefully that conversation now finds its way into the boardrooms and they have honest conversations around what is a living wage. And to your point, it might be for a household rather than an individual. We'll leave it there. That's Leila Ibrahimi, PwC People and Organization Reward Partner. Appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Stephen Amey. He's Ashburton Investments, Head of Intermediate Distributions. Stephen, appreciate the time today. Some financial literacy truths you'd known when you were 20. We're both a little way away from 20. But the key thing you're making in the note that you wrote is that it is small things. And we didn't have to do giant things, and we'll go into what they are. But small little changes can make an impact, and particularly when you've got time on your side.
Absolutely, Simon. Thank you for the opportunity. I think, you know, it's important for the youth to understand that it's not necessary to, you know, amount a huge amount of money prior to investing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the message that I was trying to get across in the article. You know, if you look at an acorn, for argument's sake, that eventually turns into, you know, an oak tree.
Yeah.
And, you know, that acorn, if you look at it as it is, it's pretty relevant. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a seed, right?
Yeah.
But in 20, 30 years' time, that same seed is now, you know, giving shelter to animals. It's providing, you know, shade for many school children throughout rural Africa to learn under. And I think that's really the messaging, you know, is that don't ignore the small things, because they do have a profound impact later down in life.
And that's your first lesson, which is looking at the small picture. And you make the point, you know, someone will say, I haven't got money to invest. I need to win the lotto or get a promotion at work. The small thing here is really just going to budgeting. And I know we don't like it, but it's immensely powerful. And it's a lesson that will set us well for life if we started young.
I've been in this industry for 27 years. And let me tell you that 99.9% of people look to basically get a better paying job, or they will argue internally to try and get a higher salary, or then, you know, the proverbial, you know, if I win the lotto, what will happen? But these are all big, you know, ifs and whats, etc. There's no certainty. You don't necessarily have, you know, control over any of that. What you do have immediate control over is your ability to have a look at what you're currently spending on and, you know, take a hard look at what is absolutely necessary,
mm-hmm.
okay, and what you are spending on that you could really cut back on. And every time, including myself, you know, at the age of 50, you go into your own budget and I look and I see, okay, you know, how am I spending? How's my family spending? Where can we cut back? I've never once failed to find an area to cut back on. Never once. And that results in an instantaneous savings, which Simon, later in the article, talks about, you know, this instantaneous gratification that we all want. So that perfectly aligns with, you know, how we are basically being almost brought up now to accept this instantaneous gratification.
Yeah, and I take your point. It is the power of the budget. Every time you look, you can find some tweaks and some money, and that's like getting the promotion or a small lotto win. The second one was go small or go home, which really is about the, you know, stop chasing the big wins. It's about getting the small bits in place, and that applies across many things. It's the FOMO when we see everyone else making money on some investment. It's worrying that we're being left behind, but it is just getting those small things step by step and adding them up.
Absolutely. You know, it's just getting involved. It's changing the mindset, and I talk about motivation and discipline. So, you know, forget about, you know, motivating yourself to invest, you know, 500 Rand or 100 Rand or 150 Rand once off. This is more around a disciplined mindset. You don't have to wait for tomorrow. You can start today. You can go through your budget. You can identify where you can find, you know, those savings. And you can start saving, you know, immediately, whether it's 100 Rand or 150 Rand. All of this, Simon, over time is going to compound and is going to add meaningfully to your future self. So there's no better time to start than today.
And I like the third one especially as well, which is be a small deal. We all want to be the big deal. You say, hang on, be the small deal. And that's rejecting sort of status anxiety. And interestingly, I was chatting with around motor vehicle sales yesterday. We're seeing the trend where people are, you know, they want a luxury German sedan. What they do is go and buy a secondhand one rather than a new one, which kind of plays into that. But it is a case of, you know, keeping up with the Kamalos or the Joneses is expensive.
Absolutely. It is expensive, and it's to our detriment at the end of the day. So for me, you know, it's difficult because most of us don't cut our cloth accordingly.
Mm.
You know, we always overstretching. You know, if we can afford to spend, you know, 1 million rand on a car, we will spend the 1.3 million rand. The salesperson will do a great job. And now we've overextended, you know, about 300,000 rand. And that puts huge pressure, you know, on yourself downstream. You know, you walk out of that dealership or you drive out of that dealership with your respective vehicle, and it's phenomenal. You know, you feel great, you feel alive, you feel phenomenal. But hey, you know, 6 months down the line, there's maybe a new model out, but you're still paying, you know, you're still paying your installments on that particular vehicle, and you've overextended yourself. So you're putting yourself under, you know, immense pressure as a result of that. So for me, I'm just saying, hey, you know, I'm not saying if you can afford a luxury German sedan, you know, then, you know, go and find yourself something that is nowhere near that. I'm saying absolutely, but cut your cloth accordingly and make sure that you've got room, okay, to live. Make sure that you've got room to make space for unforeseen circumstances that often arise, you know, and if you don't have that additional capital to cater for that, at the end of the day, you're the one that is going to feel the financial pressure at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. You go in to buy a million, you spend 1.3, you should do it the other way. Go in to buy a million and spend 700. Now you've got an extra 300 that you can do something with, like a saving and investing. We'll leave it there. This is Stephen Amey. He's Ashburton Investments, Head of Intermediated Distribution. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Kian Nyanyani yesterday around from Scope Prime, talking local asset managers. An hour later, we had the 91 numbers. We asked if you were buying these asset managers. Half of you said no, returns are poor. A third said you'd have a look. Rest said yes, doing great. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Anthony Clark.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.